You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan. It is my birthday, and I'm recording anyway. So to those of you who think that, you know, we don't work that hard and that the show is only 20 minutes a day and whatever it is, you're wrong. How about that? Harrison,
how are you doing? Solid start to the episode from the guy who took yesterday off to celebrate his birthday.
That was the joke. That was the... Never mind. We don't work hard. This is not hard work. You can find our not hard work on audio... Nope, not on Audioboom. On Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Today's show, we are going to talk about Eric Bledsoe, who does not want to be in Phoenix.
I think he literally tweeted, "I don't want to be here."
And he hasn't deleted it yet.
That's amazing.
It's well done, Bled. So we're going to talk about whether the Lakers should show interest in him there, what other moves that the Lakers might be looking to make as the year goes along, if we think they're capable of making those moves as the year rolls along. And then finally, just some stuff to tidy up at the very end. Ron Artest / Meta World Peace is back with the Lakers in a
World Peace has been brought to South Bay.
Yeah. Congratulations to everybody involved there. So let's talk about Eric Bledsoe. Harrison, do you think the Lakers should show interest here?
Okay, so I was talking to a couple of Lakers Nation guys today about this, and I think there are a couple reasons why I don't love the fit, and I think part of it is because of the interpersonal dynamics as far as we've seen an Eric Bledsoe multiple point guard experiment go very, very right, but we've also seen one go very, very wrong. And the Lakers have decided that Lonzo is their franchise point guard of the future, and I'm not sure that I really see the natural fit with him and Bledsoe on the court. I don't think that Bledsoe would necessarily want to be coming off the bench. And I mean, if you start him at shooting guard, then all of a sudden you're benching KCP, who's the Lakers' highest paid player. So to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense from that perspective, like locker room dynamics, and that's without even getting into the basketball, that I'm not really sure that Bledsoe and Lonzo is the most natural fit in a backcourt.
I agree with all of those points there, and would also add to it that Bledsoe is as frustrated as he is in Phoenix because he was a part of a rebuild that did not match his own personal timeline in terms of development. Yep. and desire to compete. So going
and
from,
he's injury prone. That's the other thing that I didn't even mention.
So going from that situation to a very similar situation in Los Angeles, even with that change of scenery, might not turn out very well, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing, though, is that you still have to kick the tires on what a deal would look like. If the Lakers can maybe get rid of – I don't think it would happen, but if the Lakers can somehow – get rid of a Deng contract or a Jordan Clarkson contract. Like, you have to ask them and be like, "Hey, what would you like?"
You, here's the reason. Here's the list of reasons why Phoenix would trade for Luol Deng, and this is the complete list.
Uh-huh.
One, to see if their training staff can live up to its reputation and literally just like resurrect the dead. That's the end of the list.
That's it. And yeah. As we've seen with Eric Bledsoe, he has been injury prone as well. So that, I mean,
and he's been injury prone in Phoenix, which is saying something. Guys go to Phoenix to, pardon the pun, but to rise like a phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, and the Lakers have experience here in respect to injury prone guys who are coming from Phoenix, and then we see how they look away from that Phoenix training staff, and Steve Nash was probably more harmful on the Lakers than he ever was on the Phoenix Suns. So,
yeah, like Steve Nash went from he went from like an all-star caliber season with the Suns to basically like getting epidurals at the end of the season for the Lakers. Like, he couldn't even walk. He was getting the treatment that they give, like, pregnant people for pain.
Yeah,
we've seen how good Phoenix's staff is.
I don't know if Nash ever played more than, like, 30 total games for the Lakers in the two seasons that he was out here.
No, there's no chance. I don't even have to look that up.
I wonder how low would that number have to get before you'd say, okay, maybe I should look this up. Don't look it up yet.
Looking it up. If it was at 20, I'd say he probably played like over 20 games. I just don't think there's any way he played 30 in any of his seasons.
No, I mean, I'm saying combined.
Oh. No, combined? He definitely played 30 combined.
Hmm. All right, now
you had to have.
Let's look it up. I'm going to look it up.
Well, let's give you the results right after this break.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, we are back. So, this is a shock. Legitimate shock. Steve Nash played 50 games in his first year with the Lakers.
What?
Yeah, do they have this wrong? They have
to have this wrong. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I'll retire.
They have to have this wrong. There's no way.
No, I mean, I guess he did. Basketball Reference never lies.
They're saying he played 32.5 minutes a game for 50 games for the Lakers. That's insane.
Okay, well, I guess I misremembered that season, but that's fine. I mean, we can ignore this kind of in any way and, like, just push our stupidity under the rug and get back to the Bledsoe thing. I mean, outside of, obviously, the Lakers would trade those guys for Bledsoe. Is there anyone that you'd be willing to give up, or do you just think that this is a bad fit?
I'd be willing to give up Jordan Clarkson.
No, I mean outside of those guys. Because the Lakers want to move on from him. Gotcha.
No, I don't think the Lakers should, like, entertain even, you know, giving up an asset for him. You can't.
But what about Randall? Would you give up Randall? I mean, I think that's, like, kind of a. The only reason you wouldn't is because that just adds more long-term money onto the cap, and the Lakers have made it very clear they want cap space. I don't think the Eric Bledsoe is going to necessarily be the thing that recruits LeBron, although it's notable they do share an agent. So they could have, like, an all-Rich Paul backcourt waiting for him.
So I'm working here on the trade machine. You'd have to include, say, Corey Brewer's expiring. Let's see if this works. Randall and Brewer for Bledsoe actually works. I would actually think about doing that because you can just stretch Bledsoe this offseason and you don't have to worry about paying Julius Randall.
Why would you even trade for him if you were just going to stretch him?
The entire move for this is to get as much cap space as you possibly can to acquire a LeBron or acquire a Paul George.
Yeah, but then you can't use the stretch on Dang and Clarkson.
I don't think it's one of those things you can only use once.
Yeah, it is. You literally.
No way.
Yeah.
I think that's the amnesty clause.
And the we don't understand the CBA.
No, I don't. I believe there's
I'm gonna
no
look
limit
this up.
On this.
I'm going to look this up.
You can look it up, but I don't. If that's the case, while you look it up, I'll go ahead and filibuster here a little bit. If that's the case, then you stretch Eric Bledsoe, or he becomes an expiring that you can use in a deal moving forward to maybe get an asset here or there after the Lakers, you know, if they don't get a LeBron James or if they don't get a Paul George, or if they do get one of those guys, you can use Eric Bledsoe's roughly $15 million deal next year that would be expiring. That helps a lot in making the kind of move that the Lakers will probably be looking to make, where they're trying to get more immediate help for LeBron and or Paul George. And, you know, he's more valuable in that sense than I think Julius Randle would be in the scenario where they'd have to probably
let
him walk.
It looks like they can use it more than once. I was mistaken.
I thought so. The amnesty, they didn't even have an amnesty clause in this latest CBA, but that was the amnesty thing, was that you can only use it once. So
okay. Yeah, I mean, I was just confused. That's my bad. I normally am actually, like, fairly up on this, like, CBA stuff, so I'm a little embarrassed about that. This has not been my best podcast. I apologize to everyone.
It's okay. I mean, you being wrong to me is nothing new.
It's pretty new.
Oh, it's new. Dang.
It's pretty new. I'm pretty mad now. Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see. I just honestly, like, I don't think he's good enough, and I don't think he's been able to stay healthy enough that it's really worth trading for him. And, like, what's going to be an awkward fit anyway? I get that the Lakers are bad and you want to acquire talent, but I just think that this is one of the ones where it just makes no sense to me as far as a plan moving forward. That's like a Knicks move.
It would be Knicks tape-ish. That...
Yeah. Like, Eric Bledsoe is the exact type of... he is the prototype
of the bad Knicks combo guard?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think... Here's the thing. The Lakers are at a spot where the two forms of thinking that are going to go up against each other right now is the Lakers are in a spot where beggars can't be choosers and you get talent wherever you can get talent. But the other side of it is you are working to develop a bunch of young guys, and bringing in somebody who was already a malcontent risks the development of the aforementioned young guys. So
yeah,
we've
seen locker rooms with him in it blow up before.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was the Lakers, I just don't think that there's enough pro arguments to offset that.
Yeah.
And all the other downside, like, he's just not a good 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. And he could probably guard two sometimes. Like, he's shown that he can do that, but it's just not the most natural fit next to Lonzo, and I just don't see why you need to tie up long-term money in someone who is potentially just going to break down pretty soon anyway.
Yeah. No,
he's only 27, almost 28. But, okay, he's younger than I thought, mm-hmm. but still, with all of his injuries, I'd be very reticent if I was a team about, like, the Lakers that's rebuilding about trading for him.
Yeah, like, not all years in the NBA are equal, and the number of injuries that he's had make him an old 28.
He's aging in dog years.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. We haven't heard any rumblings about Lakers being interested at all. So.
Yeah, there have been no reports of Lakers' interest. It's mm-hmm. just like we're throwing this at the wall because everybody always, whenever there's a player available, it's, oh, should the Lakers trade for this guy? Should the Lakers trade for this guy? Like, guys, I don't know. Like, stop tweeting at me.
No, we do know in this sense. You very strongly would say that you know that they shouldn't trade for him.
Yeah, but I don't know if they will, I guess. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I don't think they will.
I don't think so either. I kind of doubt they get involved. I mean, maybe they'd make a call and just see, like, what it would take to get him if the Suns are crazy or something, and maybe they do really value Luol Deng. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there's a floor for what the Lakers would have to offer, right? Because the report out there is that the Denver Nuggets are interested in sending Emmanuel Mudiay out there. So would you send an asset equal to the value of Emmanuel Mudiay to acquire him?
I have no idea what the value of Emmanuel... The value of Emmanuel Mudiay, I feel like, is in the eye of the beholder. Like, some team is going to feel like they can figure him out, and other teams are going to feel like, okay, this guy just proves that he sucks.
Yeah. No, but in that sense, that's like... That almost describes Larry Nance Jr. to a T.
True. That's true. There are probably a lot of teams that feel like he'd be amazing with them, and there are some teams that are just like, oh, this guy is more afraid of shooting than I am of anything.
Yeah. Him and Larry Nance Jr. playing Markelle Fultz one-on-one, nobody would score. And nobody would shoot. Like, it would just be those guys, like, kind of, if it was a boxing match, they'd be just, like, dancing around each other, and then time would explode.
God.
All right. Some quick little thoughts before we get out of here. Ron Artest or Meta World Peace is a player development coach with the South Bay Lakers. You had a really interesting point about that, linking it back to Luke Walton.
So I think it is notable. Normally, South Bay Lakers hires are not newsworthy, mm-hmm. Like as far as in a general sense. And I say that as somebody who covers the team. But it's just as far as general NBA fandom and general Laker fandom, like, South Bay Lakers are not, like, they don't move the needle a whole lot. Now, that bears out in metrics. But this one does a little bit, because I think that it's notable that they're bringing in another former player, somebody who just played for them last year. And they did this with Luke Walton, where they brought him into at the time, the Defenders as a player development coach. And so, I mean, maybe at some point in the future, we'll be seeing head coach Meta World Peace.
Yep.
Or, like, at least I'm at least rooting for Lakers assistant Meta World Peace. Like, he needs to be around the team. That guy is a delight, and he's, like, one of the best human beings I've, like, ever been around, as far as, like, just interacting. And, like, you just see how much everybody on the team loves him. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he's just somebody that you want around, and I think he'll help the South Bay Lakers. And I think once he starts to get a little bit more experience coaching, I would not be surprised to see him get an NBA call-up. far as like as a coach, not back to the league. I don't think that any NBA team is ever going to play Meta World Peace to play basketball for them again.
No, I think those days are over. If he wants that, he'll probably have to go to China or something. So,
and he knows, as a development coach with them, when guys like Josh Hart, when guys like Thomas Bryant, when guys like Ivica Zubac come down there and they're with the South Bay Lakers, they're going to feel a little bit more like connected. They're at home and like they're connected to the parent team. And Meta is a guy that obviously has a very close relationship with Luke and is someone that can, you know, very much coordinate with him on, hey, when these guys are down here, what do you want me working with them on? Not that Luke couldn't do that with any other coach, but it's just those guys are like Luke and Meta are probably already texting. And it's one of those things where if you've ever worked with in an office where, you know, you have friends and you have people that you're less friends with. And when you're working on projects, you kind of would rather work with the people that you're already friends with.
My one counterpoint to this is that it again gets back to the only way to work for the Lakers in any capacity is to have been a former Laker.
Got to know what it means to be a Laker, Anthony. Yeah,
that's my one concern here is that it continues to be insular.
I would actually argue that that's more meaningful in South Bay because that's the type of person that can go in there and say, hey, I do know what it means to be an NBA player. I do know what it takes to be an NBA player, and you need to do this to be an NBA player.
Right, yeah. But
so
I actually agree with the overall line of thought
as far as the organization goes. I just mean in this specific case, that actually may be a plus.
I don't think there's a shortage of NBA players looking for coaching gigs, though.
True, so, but like, it's
I, like to me, it doesn't.
You know, networking is important.
It is, yeah. Especially when, but again, my criticism has been a long-standing one, is that it continues to be the same freaking people who continue to get jobs with the Lakers, and the Lakers keep making the same mistakes year in, year out. All right.
That was a dark ending to the podcast. Okay.
We'll be back at it. Hey, by the time everybody's listening to this show tomorrow or today, when everybody's listening to this, the Dodgers are going to have a World Series game. So enjoy that, everybody. There's your bright thought to send you out on this one. We'll talk to everybody again tomorrow when the Lakers are getting ready to play another game, though I don't.
They actually will. Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow they will be ready. I don't understand how time works.
Yeah.
But yeah, or the Dodgers will lose and you'll be sad. And I'm sorry to everyone.
See, like, why?
Well, you made it dark, too.
That's way darker.
I'm sorry. I'm rooting for them this time. They have Cal State Fullerton's own Justin Turner. So
I can't believe you know a baseball player's name.
I know, like, at least probably, like, three Dodgers names.
All right. I want to hear them now. I'm interested.
Justin Turner, Yasiel Puig, and...
Come on.
The
guy who's starting tomorrow's
game. Clayton Kershaw.
There you go.
There's three. I did it.
All right, everybody. I'm ending it on that. Have a good one.